your home of the Pens and the best Pens coverage. WXDX FM Pittsburgh, an iHeart Radio station.
Penguins won, and they do have guts. But once again, the Steelers are in the news. The piling on continues. Emmanuel Sanders says that when he left the Steelers, general manager Kevin Colbert told him, quote, "Who do you think you are, Antonio Brown?" unquote, because Sanders wanted more than the Steelers offered. Sanders said he felt disrespected. I love that word, disrespected. You know what people most use that word, disrespected? It's people who don't give any respect at all to anyone. The Steelers offered Sanders $9 million over 3 years. Denver offered $15 million over 3 years. Okay, so go to Denver, which Sanders did, and won a Super Bowl. So what's the problem? Frig Emmanuel Sanders. He's a pissant number three receiver. He's just a step above Josh Harris. And Sanders wasn't AB. Isn't AB. These guys just want what they want. And if they don't get it, oh my God, I've been disrespected. It's just more piling on. Piling on the Steelers. What's Colbert supposed to say to Sanders? Oh, geez, slot receiver, who we could easily replace in the fifth round. Please stay and keep playing for us. We'll give you whatever you want. No, Colbert's not supposed to say that. The Steelers aren't supposed to do that. It's just piling on. The athletes are disposable. They get replaced all the time. Emmanuel Sanders isn't a pimple on the ass of football. The world will little note nor long remember. In his story, it just doesn't ring true anyway. I've known Kevin Colbert, 25 to 30 years? I've never even heard the guy raise his voice. I just don't believe he said that to Emmanuel Sanders. I think Sanders is a liar, just like Bell's a liar, like Brown's a liar, like Josh Harris is a liar. This is the Mark Madden Show. I told you this wasn't going away, even when the toxic twins went away. I told you, the turmoil, it's in the Steelers' DNA now. It's not going away for a long, long time. 412-333-WXDX is the number to call. You can also do what the cool kids do and listen on, follow me on Twitter, at MarkMaddenX. I wanted to get a magician in today to perform live in the studio because, you know, nothing plays on radio like a magician, but we couldn't get one on short notice. But a company that provides magicians, Greenfield Mime and Magic.com, we got the next best thing from them, a troop of mimes. I'll be interviewing a troop of mimes at 4 o'clock today. You know, just something different for Friday. And they will be performing live right here on 105.9 The X. That's a mime troupe from Greenfield Mime and Magic. Right there on Greenfield Avenue. They'll be on the show and performing at 4 p.m. We got Jerry Dulac talking about the Steelers at 3:30. We got Army Colby Armstrong talking Pens at 5:15. So let's talk about the Pens. Because today's not a day to complain, although many are in the echo chamber. Matt Murray played terrific. Yes, he let in the one sketchy goal. And yes, it was late. And yes, it gave back a 1-0 lead. But this time of year, all you need is 2 points. That's it. That's the list. All you need is 2 points. And the Penguins got them. Murray was perfect in the shootout. Sid scored in the shootout. Columbus lost in regulation. The Islanders lost in regulation. Carolina lost in regulation. So it's all good. That's a good night for the Penguins. The oddest thing about the Penguins right now is they can't score. Just one goal in 65 minutes of hockey. Kessel had some decent chances. Hornquist had five shots on goal. It's crazy how the Penguins can't score, but they really are a one-line team without Evgeny Malkin. But I like the effort, and I like the grit, and I like the defense. Nashville had 29 shots on goal. That's a manageable number. The Penguins are playing it tight and simple, and it's the time of year to do that. Letang was brilliant. Again, what a catalyst. How about that pass to Rust in front from the point on the Penguins' only goal? You can't get more precise than that. Letang should win the Norris Trophy because he is the NHL's best defenseman this year. He won't, but he should. Hey, that whole Penguins defense is great right now. Gudbranson is playing just lights up, but that's what they said about UFO. Y'all can bitch about Matt Murray all you want, but he's played great since December, and that's acknowledging the occasional bad goal. His save percentage this month is 93.3, and the big thing is there's no alternative to Matt Murray. So you can bitch or you can appreciate. You can just get mad because you like to get mad, or you can see what's there. Penguin Talk, I want that first, fast, furious, and foremost. Dial 412-333-WXDX. I'm also curious about your reaction to the thing with Emmanuel Sanders and Kevin Colbert. I hear other people on the radio saying, with great gravitas, is there a problem with the Steelers organization? And there just isn't. Not beyond Tomlin's enabling, but you don't hear ex-Steelers criticizing Tomlin, and boy, I wonder why that is. Maybe because he let them have their way. Or maybe it's because blaming Ben and or Kevin Colbert is more, what's the word for it? Fashionable. Listen, there's no problem with Colbert. I just don't believe he said what Sanders said Colbert said. And if Colbert did say it, there's absolutely nothing wrong with it. Like I said, we got Jerry Dulac on at 3:30 to discuss. And don't forget the mimes at 4 o'clock. Dulac at 3:30, a mime troupe at 4 p.m. live right here on the X. Staying with the Steelers, Morgan Burnett has been told he's going to get released on April 1. He came in with some promise, but he sucked. But he's unfortunately typical of free agent signings, past and present, probably future too, free agent signings by the Steelers. They get average talents at reasonable prices, and some help, and some don't. And that's going to be the case with the three guys they've signed this year too. Moncrief, Nelson, and Barron. It's a crapshoot. Tom Izzo got in a player's face yesterday during Michigan State's first-round game at the NCAAs. That was a win over Bradley. Izzo got an Aaron Henry's face, and it was pretty intense. Izzo kind of got held back by another player. Aaron Henry's a freshman, and he's not necessarily very disciplined or consistent. Now, all the soft softies out there are making a big deal out of this, but it's not. Izzo's the coach, and he's a great coach. Henry's a freshman, and Izzo's trying to make him better. Izzo knows how to coach. That's all that is coaching. You millennials, you soft scumbag, don't want to work, want to get paid millennials. You've got to grow a set. There's nothing wrong with what Izzo did. The kid didn't have a problem with it, so nor should you. According to our buddy John Perotta from DK, Francisco Liriano said the Pirates will let him know tomorrow whether he makes the team. He said he will not go to the minor leagues at this stage of his career, which is certainly understandable. When did they get Liriano back? 105.9 The X.
And now, the super genius, Mark Madden.
Hey, Mark, second time caller. Love the show.
I'd like to talk to Mark about Marc-Andre Fleury. Pay attention, dumb skull, and talk.
The X at 105.9.
There's a rule change being proposed in the NFL. Apparently not enough onside kicks are being recovered for the league's liking, you know, to keep the result in doubt. So after scoring, a team may be given the option to instead complete a 4th-and-15 pass, or I guess a really well-designed and executed draw play, then get 4th-and-15 from their own 35, and if you make the sticks, you keep the ball. If you don't, the other team takes over. That's an option that would replace an onside kick after scoring. You could only do it once a game and only in the fourth quarter. It's kind of schlocky, and really, completing a 15-yard pass seems too easy, but it's different, which I guess makes it okay. Some movie notes. I got a trailer posted on my webpage at the X website of the Deadwood movie. It's 1889, South Dakota is now state, but Seth Bullock still looks pissed off. Timothy Oliphant, who plays Bullock, he always looks pissed off in every movie he's ever been in. But in Deadwood, the movie and the series before it, he looks really pissed off all the time and acts accordingly. The Deadwood movie premieres May 31st on HBO. I can't wait to see it. I can't believe the Deadwood series was cut short after just 2 seasons. I think that that just wasn't long enough. The Dirt, the Motley Crue movie, premieres tonight on Netflix. It's getting some reviews, which are less than stellar. Quote, "The Dirt is a poorly written, lazily directed, cheap-looking, and ultimately kind of boring movie about one of the scummiest gangs of sociopaths to ever go multi-platinum," unquote. Look, don't hold back. Write what you think. But when they call Crew a scummy gang of sociopaths, that tells me that whoever wrote that review didn't like Motley Crue in the first place and kind of had the bad opinion about the movie preordained. There's a lot of bad reviews out there. Here's one I actually kind of like. It's a junior varsity version of Bohemian Rhapsody. A lot of inaccuracies are also cited. Pam Anderson's not even mentioned in the movie, which is kind of weird. Maybe she had her lawyers on alert. But the inaccuracies, if they're done to make the movie better, don't bother me. If they're just inaccurate because somebody effed up. Case in point, in Bohemian Rhapsody, it shows the song process for writing We Will Rock You. Brian May wanted to write an audience participation song. But it's set in the 80s in the movie, and We Will Rock You came out in 1977. Now, there's no reason to spoil the timeline for something like that, so why do it? It reminds me of the movie about the 1980 Olympics, the hockey tournament, Miracle. They changed the time when one of the U.S. goals was scored for the movie. Why would they do that? What's the difference? But they did, and it didn't spoil the movie. It's a great movie, but you kind of just shake your head. Look, this Motley Crue movie, it was never going to be Citizen Kane. It's friggin' Motley Crue we're talking about. I bet The Dirt is awesome if you like Motley Crue. And I do, and I bet I will. A hockey injury note before I forget. Kempney, the defenseman for Washington, pretty good young defender. He's out indefinitely, lower body injury, and that'll hurt them. Their defense is not stellar to begin with. It's pretty good, but not stellar, and he had really grown into being a big part of it despite limited experience in the NHL. I always joke about how bad the NHL's run. I was researching a story for the Penguins website about when the Penguins made the playoffs on the last day of the 1971-72 season, when the Penguins won and Philadelphia lost, and the Flyers lost to Buffalo on a goal with 4 seconds left, and that knocked them out of the playoffs. And while doing the research, the Vancouver Canucks entered the National Hockey League in 1970 as an expansion team. In their first 4 years, they played in the Eastern Division. There were two divisions, East and West. The Canucks played in the East, even though Vancouver is about as far west as you can possibly get. But that's the NHL. Up next, we'll talk football with Jerry Dulac right here on the X.
And now, the super genius, Mark Madden.
Double M, what's up? Super genius, how are you?
Terrific.
Did porn stars practice?
Nope, they never have sex unless it's on video.
The X at 105.9.
Joining me now to talk Steelers. And boy, the talk always centers around controversy these days, doesn't it? From the Post-Gazette, he is football writer Jerry Dulac. Jerry, the piling on continues by ex-Steelers. Emmanuel Sanders says Kevin Colbert disrespected him by saying, "You're no Antonio Brown." But I don't believe Colbert said that. I've never even heard Colbert raise his voice.
No, Mark, you know, I'm kind of with you. Kevin Colbert is not that type of person. He is, don't get me wrong, during the game, sitting next to him, at least to where our seat is in the press box, and Art Rooney and Kevin sit right next to us, separated by glass, Kevin gets fiery and can get angry during a game. But he is not the type of person, when you see him, however he is comporting himself, whether it's, you know, in a press conference or otherwise, I mean, he is as calm an individual as there is, and a person who always says the right thing. Now, obviously, I'm not privy to any conversation he had with Emmanuel Sanders, but I will tell you this, they liked Emmanuel Sanders. It wasn't like they were trying to denigrate Emmanuel Sanders. I don't know what Kevin said or how Emmanuel Sanders took whatever it was that he claims that he said, but you know what? I mean, I just think that's some of the false bravado that these guys create in their minds to kind of, quote, motivate them. And, you know, how many years later now, are we talking about 5 years later, all of a sudden the narrative and the storyline can change because you don't, you know, you think you remember it one way when it was actually another. And, you know, I get a little tired of it, Mark, because it's just, you know, it's all these guys coming out of the woodwork and wanting to take their shots because somebody else did. And you know what? Boo hoo. Poor guy. Somebody said something negative about him, if in fact they did. And now they're upset and they take umbrage with it. Oh boy, that's really tough for them, isn't it? While they're making all their millions.
Why is the Steelers organization under fire so much right now? And why is the national media playing along?
Well, Mark, because it's under fire by people who are morons and are stupid enough to not really know what the heck's going on and believing two selfish ingrates such as Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell. You know, ask anybody who has played with them for years, these players who were, who like Antonio Brown, these narcissists who are, you know, only out for themselves. Where was Antonio Brown's complaints about the organization when in his second year, which is unheard of, the Steelers gave him a big contract? That just doesn't happen in the NFL unless you're a superstar quarterback. But where was he complaining about the organization then? I'm just amazed, Mark, at the amount of former players who are stupid enough, not only stupid enough to believe their narrative, but to support it. And specifically Antonio Brown. They are supporting behavior that to me is unprecedented in sports. Bailing out on your team, refusing to practice, refusing to attend meetings, refusing to go to the team hotel the night before the game, refusing to call your coach back, refusing to call the owner back, and then showing up expecting to play as though nothing was wrong. And for these players to support that behavior, Mark, it just stuns me. And you see who it is all the time, but to me, all that is reflective of guys who, you know, one are never around, have no idea what they're talking about. And I know you probably want to get to this, but it's just incredible to me that this blame is being directed, some of the blame is being directed at Ben Roethlisberger as though he created this situation.
Well, let's look specifically at the story about Ben supposedly intentionally fumbling. How does that even run at the Sports Illustrated website, Jerry? The writer talked to one guy in the huddle. Why didn't he talk to any of the other 10 before writing that story?
And look, Mark, who we talked to use your word, to some jabroni who had a cup of coffee with the team. Look, I could tell you that Ben Roethlisberger, if he isn't the most competitive person on that team, I want to see somebody who is more competitive, and he is one of the most competitive people that I have ever seen. There is no way Ben Roethlisberger is going to fumble on purpose based on the words of some Yahoo who doesn't know what he's talking about, doesn't even know the offense, doesn't even know the plays, and he's going to sit there and tell you what the play should have been and what Ben Roethlisberger did or didn't do. To me, it's just incredible, and more incredible to me is, to your point, these people picking up on this and running with it. To me, Mark, it's the same as ESPN doing the sit-down interview with Antonio Brown, in which I'm sure both the interviewer and the questions were handpicked by the agent and Antonio Brown. And they didn't ask him any of the negative stuff. They just gave him a form to vent and say whatever he wanted to say without challenging the veracity of what he was saying.
Well, no question. The interviews with Bell, that was SI, and then Brown with ESPN, those were just infomercials. Told lies, and the interviewers didn't follow up. Case in point, Bell claimed he didn't get the ball enough, but the last year he played, he led the league in touches, and the woman who did the interview just sat there and nodded blithely.
And Mark, the hypocrisy of that, too, is Le'Veon Bell built his whole platform as to why he should get a record-setting contract for a running back on the fact that he's not only a running back, he's a receiver, and that his body is built to touch the ball that many times. And then all of a sudden, when he sat out, he said, I don't want to touch the ball that many times. It's hurting my market value. So which is it? Is his market value expanded because of his ability to touch the ball so many times, or is it being hurt because of his ability to touch the ball so many times? So there's been hypocrisy laced throughout Le'Veon Bell's entire charade, and all these guys are trying to do, and all their agents are trying to do, is repair their image with their new teams and around the league. That's all they're trying to do.
We're talking to Jerry Dulac at the Post-Gazette here on the X. Jerry, how would you rate the Steelers' signings in free agency, and how will each contribute? What do you reckon?
You know, Mark, let me say one more thing before I answer that, too. You know, I don't want to sit here and sound like I am waving the flag for the Steelers, but all you have to do is be around them every day, year after year after year, to see not only the way they treat their people, but the way they have succeeded better than anybody over the past four decades, and there's a reason for it. They know what they're doing. It starts at the top, and players like Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell have no business being a part of that organization. To your point about free agency, I really like the decision to sign Steve Nelson. You know, they made overtures to Bradley Roby. He didn't want to do a three-year deal. He signed a one-year deal with Houston. But they kind of had those guys one and 1A, Roby and Steve Nelson. In fact, I know at least one of the coaches preferred Nelson. And so what they did is they went out and bought themselves a starter, not a guy who's going to come in and compete and add depth, a guy who's going to come in and start. And that was priority. That was one of the two priorities, maybe the biggest one. And then signing Mark Barron is a guy who has played that position. It's not Morgan Burnett, who they asked to play that position and didn't want to play that position, and who has a history of injuries and was being very judicious about how quick that he was to come back and play when he had those injuries, especially when he was going to play so close to the line of scrimmage. So I like that signing too, and I have no problem with the decision to sign Dante Moncrief. I was just surprised, as I was for free agency in general, at the amount of money they gave him. It's not my money, but $9 million over 2 years seems like a large amount for a guy whose catch ratio, target to catch, is not very good. Now, I know he didn't play with the greatest quarterbacks, but he was in Indy with Andrew Luck. He's had decent numbers. I don't look at Dante Moncrief coming in and being their number two receiver automatically, but I think if he's your third receiver, he's certainly better than Justin Hunter. And I think it also spells the end for Darius Heyward Bey, because one of the things they want to do, Mark, they want to remake their special teams this year. And I think bringing in Dante Moncrief, because they'll still draft a wide receiver in the first two rounds, I think bringing him in will spell the end for DHB and probably even Justin Hunter as well.
Well, staying with that, who's the Steelers' number two receiver right now? Is it Moncrief or is it James Washington?
Well, Mark, that's what training camp is going to bear out, and the OTAs. What they have seen of James Washington and what we see, there is no doubt they have tremendous hope for this guy because they see it all the time in practice. You saw it for about the last two or so games during the regular season. We saw it during the exhibition season. This guy has tremendous ability, and they're hoping that you know, that the light goes on and it translates to the football field on more of a regular basis. So, and then, you know, you factor in a rookie coming in the draft. So I think you're looking, you know, they're not playing right now. If they were playing right now, it would probably be Dante Moncrief. But I think when they get to the season, you know, it's going to be a little bit more interchangeable. They have a number one receiver, Mark, but they don't necessarily have a number two. It just depends on what packages they want to run and what defenses they're going to face in a given game.
Looking ahead to the draft, which is now about a month away, I believe the Steelers got to get either Devin White or Devin Bush in the first round of the draft chair, one of the two stud inside backers, because there's still a big hole at inside backer, isn't there?
Yeah, there's no question. I don't think the signing of Mark Barron changes what they would ideally like to do. Now, what they do is going to be another story, but they will not ignore that position like they did last year. You know, the kid from Alabama, Mack Wilson, is a terrific inside linebacker, but he doesn't play the way the Steelers, you know, would desire, what they're looking for. He's not the speed guy like Devin White or Devin Bush. Ideally, that's one of the two guys they would like. I think Devin White is going to be out of their range. But, Mark, with 10 draft picks, they don't need 10 draft picks. That is a waste of time and a waste of picks. They need about 5 draft picks. They need a body. They need a playmaker. They don't need bodies. That's the last thing they need. So, to me, even if they have to package and move up in the second round, I'd start swapping and I'd throw about 3 of those, you know, one of those fourth-rounders, a 5th or 6th, I'd throw 3 draft choices and swap a position to move up somewhere to get a player, you know, first or second round that you want to get. Then 10 draft picks, is if they do that, Mark, it's a waste of their time. And to me, it's not a good move on any of those 3 draft days.
Art Rooney did a conference call with the media today, and he talked a lot about replay. Art doesn't want more replay, and I agree, Jer. I want better, but not more.
Yeah, you know, his concern, and his concern always has been, and he has stressed this to the league for the last couple of years, is, you know, Mark, is the pace of the game and the length of the game and the number of delays. And he's concerned that more replay will be more delays and more making their product tougher to watch. You know, so much attention. I get it when it gets to such a big game like the NFC Championship game. And let's face it, one play has caused all this, and I get it too. But that doesn't mean you change your entire game for one play because one or two officials so badly missed that call. And I know you want to try to correct that, but, you know, Art is looking at it from the, you know, with the big picture of what constant stoppages could do to the game. And so they've always been against expanding replay. They want to try and get it right, but they don't want to ruin the enjoyment of their game. You know, when you're in a stadium watching that, and you're it's one thing to sit through it at home because you could get up and go get a sandwich, a beer, or whatever it is you want to do. At a stadium, it's a little harder to do that, and that he's more concerned about what it does to the people at the game watching as opposed to the people who are at home, and that's annoying enough for those people as well.
Art said something about a team running a play on 4th and 15. As an alternative to an onside kick, keeping the ball that way. Has that actually been proposed? I got to admit, it's different, so I kind of like it, but it seems a little nutty, too.
Yeah, it does, Mark, and it was proposed, but that doesn't mean, I don't think it was proposed by the competition committee. I was looking at all the proposals this morning, Mark, and it's dizzying to look at them all, and so many of them get turned down. So I don't, but I don't think that was proposed by the competition committee. Maybe it was, so forgive me if I'm wrong about that. But yeah, it was kind of goofy. I don't think that has much chance. I think they're going to kind of leave it the way they do. I think the one thing that they should change that they're going to look at, that Art is in favor of certainly looking at, is the overtime rule and why you have it the way you do. To me, you should give each team at least one possession and decide it there. And the way they do it, to me, Mark, is just is stupid. So the other proposal by the Chiefs, who made that proposal, was to whoever wins the coin toss at the beginning of the game should get the decision to, you know, effectively, quote, win the coin toss in overtime. They then should get the decision if they want the ball or they want to kick. I don't think that has any chance of passing, but I think that overtime rule does. And also, they want to, that proposal includes eliminating overtime in a preseason, which I would imagine every coach in the National Football League would support.
And every player, too. One last thing, right, Jer, about all the controversy. Ben has been horribly villainized, and wrongly so, but has not said a word about it. Is he smart to do that? It kind of feels to me like that's the wise move.
I'm with you, Mark. Let those people say those things. One, you don't want to bring yourself down to their level, and two, all you're doing is bringing more attention to what some of these morons are saying. So, to me, I think he's doing the right thing. Let it go. Don't respond to it. Just take the high road and be the better person. I mean, because, you know, some of it is just, you know, the Josh Harris thing with the fumble is just so ridiculous. And some of the things Shannon Sharp just says are just so beyond me and some of these former players. To me, Mark, the voice of reason through this whole thing, I would encourage people, go listen to Chris Carter. He nails it every time. He's a former player, former wide receiver, a star player. He gets it, and you can tell by what he says. He not only makes sense, he knows what he's talking about. These other guys don't.
Jerry, great stuff. We'll do it again soon.
All right, Mark. Always good chatting with you.
That's Jerry Dulek. I'm Mark Madden. Don't forget, we got the Mime Troupe at the top of the hour. 105.9 X.
And now the super genius, Mark Madden.
He don't do nothing but win. He just knows how to win.
Super G, loud and proud.
He is horrible. He is terrible.
The X at 105.9.
Well, we're running a bit late because we have too many friggin' ads on the show, but we'll just go past 6 o'clock if we have to. The Mimes are running a bit late anyway. We have Mimes live on the show in just a few moments. What, they're here? Okay, good. We'll get to them in a moment. It is Must See Radio, a Mime Troupe live on the X with me in just a few moments. The Wall Street Journal is reporting that Colin Kaepernick got less than $10 million in his settlement with the NFL, that collusion lawsuit. It was initially reported that he got between $60 and $80 million, but now it looks like it's less than $10 million. So Kaepernick may yet play in the AAF. Here's hoping. I'd love to see a showdown between him and Manziel. No Quarter brought to you by CW Electrical Services and by the Ford King, Richard Bazzi Schultz Ford. We reported yesterday that Cam Newton has given up climaxing. That report has been fleshed out, if you will. Cam is not having sex in the month of March. He says it makes his mind stronger. Wow. I was born with a tested IQ of 166. If not having sex makes your mind stronger, I should have the power to levitate objects by now. They're doing another Woodstock concert. 3 days of peace and love, peace and love. It's on the 50th anniversary of the original Woodstock at roughly the same site in upstate New York. Robert Plant is on the bill one day. Greta Van Fleet is on the bill the next day. And they are positioned in exactly the same spot on the bill for each of their respective days. I hope that irony isn't lost on Robert, the old lemon squeezer. Okay, let's get him in here. Up next, we have a troupe of mimes on the Mark Madden Show. Mimes up next on 105.9.